Hey, Jorge, you know how sometimes everybody thinks they know the answer to a question, but they're actually all wrong?
You mean like how you think everything weird in space is because of aliens?
Well, that's not a good example. I think it probably is because of aliens.
Or you mean like why people think the sky is blue?
Yeah, a lot of people think the sky is blue because of the ocean.
Wait, it's not because of the ocean?
Do you even listen to our podcast? We did a whole episode about that.
No, I don't listen to our podcast. I'm too busy looking out for aliens.
Well, if you did pay attention sometimes, you'd realize that sometimes there's a question in science that everybody assumes they know the answer to, but it turns out they don't.
Hi, I'm Jorge. I'm a cartoonist and the creator of PhD Comics.
Hi, I'm Daniel. I'm a podcast host and part-time particle physicist.
Oh, have you been downgraded to part-time now?
I decided let's make this podcast thing my primary activity. That's right. It's 2 hours a week, but it's the most important and valuable 2 hours of my week.
2 hours of work? Isn't that too much for a physicist?
Well, you know, you got your naps in, you got your coffee breaks, you got your scribbling nonsense on the board to look busy. So it's a pretty full day after a while.
You mean a pretty full week?
Pretty full week, yeah. You know, but I model my workday after my cartooning role models, you know?
Yeah.
Sleep in, never change out of your pajamas, this kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, we should all look up to cartoonists.
That's right. As a nation, we would all be more productive if we followed the cartooning work week.
We'd all be a lot more funny.
That's right. We would doodle our way to prosperity. But you, our lovely listeners, are listening to our podcast.
Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe, a production of iHeartRadio.
In which we take weird and funny and amazing and crazy things about the universe and try to doodle them into your brain with silly analogies and bad jokes.
That's right. We try to take you to the corners, the far-reaching corners of the universe, and to explore the heaviest things, the biggest things, the brightest things, the smallest things that are out there for us to discover.
That's right. And so we have this series of podcasts we've been really enjoying about the extreme universe.
Extreme.
In which we look at all the weirdest, nastiest, hottest, wettest, craziest things in the universe. And we have actually done some of those. We did the hottest, we did the brightest, we did the biggest. What else did we do?
You make our podcast sound a little not safe for work there, Daniel.
That's all in the minds of the listener, okay?
Well, that's kind of the universe.
Those are
right?
Totally PG terms.
The universe is not safe for work.
Oh, I thought you meant the universe is in the minds of the listener, which is also sort of true from a philosophical point of view.
So today we're continuing our series of extreme things in the universe. And in this episode, we are going to explore what is the densest thing in the universe?
The densest thing in the universe, that's right. Not the heaviest, not the biggest, not the smallest, but the most compact, the thing with the most stuff stuffed into it.
That's right. Not the sharpest thing, the densest thing.
That's right. Not the brightest thing, but the densest
not
thing.
The brightest, that's right. Not the smartest thing in the universe, the densest.
That's right. Yeah, smartest thing in the universe, that would be an interesting discussion. I wonder what is the smartest thing in the universe. Do you think it's a human or you think it's some super intelligent alien race?
I think the universe is the smartest thing in the universe.
Oh, snap. We are the universe thinking? Is that what you're thinking, where you're going? We are the brain of the universe?
The universe is us, yes.
Wow, that's very holistic of you. I got to get some of those banana peels you must have been smoking before today's episode. I am one with the universe and the universe is me and I am thinking the thoughts of the universe.
I don't smoke banana peels. I just eat them raw.
You eat the flesh and I smoke the peels. So we're a perfect team.
Well, what is the densest thing? Meaning like what is the most compact, scrunched up, thickest, you know, craziest, most amount of stuff in a small amount of space thing that exists out there in the universe?
That's right. And the point of this series, the Extreme Universe series, is to remind you that our little corner of the universe is fairly ho-hum. It's not very fast. It's not very big. It's not very hot. It's not very cold. It's sort of just right. And what that means is that there is crazy stuff out there. There's stuff out there that's bigger you than you can imagine, that's hotter than you can imagine, that's emptier than you can imagine. And one of my funnest extremes is density, to imagine how much stuff you can cram into the tiniest spot, get those atoms all crowded up into each other. Because when that happens, really weird things happen. Matter does all sorts of strange stuff when you squeeze it together.
And so a lot of our listeners, a lot of you listening out there might be thinking, oh, I know the answer to this question. It's obviously a black hole.
Hint, it's not a black hole.
It's not a black hole.
Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. There's a bit of a philosophical argument there at the end.
Oh, teaser.
There's a plot twist. It is, it isn't, it is, it isn't. Some people say it is, some people say it isn't. Those other people throw the other first people into a black hole, end the argument. Mm,
and it all just becomes a black hole of a mess.
Exactly. It becomes a mental black hole. We all get a little denser.
So hopefully that sucked you into the topic of this podcast. So stay tuned to see if it is or if it's not a black hole. Daniel says maybe it is not.
Maybe it is, maybe it is not. Exactly. But before we dive into that, I went around and I asked folks on campus at UC Irvine, I said, what do you think is the densest thing in the universe? Because I was curious, is everybody just going to say it's a black hole? Do people have other ideas? Have people done the careful reading about the fundamental issues in the corners and the centers of black holes?
Or maybe people knew what the densest thing in the universe is. Maybe it's something else and people knew about it.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe it's the center of some weird kind of candy. And, famously dense or something else weird people had read about. So I walked around and I asked people, I said, what do you think is the densest thing in the universe?
So think about it for a second. And if somebody asked you on the street, what is the densest thing in the universe? Would you answer that it's a black hole? Here's what people had to say.
A black hole.
Oh, man. I hope it's chocolate.
A black hole.
Probably a black hole. A black hole.
Neutron stars. Something like that. Or black holes.
If I didn't take a guess, antimatter.
Black hole, I think. I want to say the core.
The core of?
The core of the Earth.
Okay.
Okay. Cool. Or actually, no. Universe, probably a sun, a star, right? Okay. Yeah, I would say a star.
All right. So most people answered black hole. A lot of people said it's a black hole.
It's a good go-to thing. I think people think, what's the densest thing in the universe? And their mind goes straight to a black hole because they imagine a black hole has a lot of stuff stuffed into it.
But it wasn't the only answer. There were some pretty interesting ones here. I like the one that said it's chocolate.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure that was a serious answer. Somebody out there really had a hankering for some dark, dark chocolate, right? The thing that interested me about these answers
maybe they were thinking like riches, like what's the richest thing that you've ever tasted?
What's the most calorie-dense thing in the universe? Maybe that's what they were thinking.
Oh, there you go. Is it still a black hole? Like what if you eat a black hole? That's a lot of calories, technically, right?
What if you ate a black hole? I think that's a physics question nobody has ever asked me before. Wow, we are breaking new ground today. One of the things I liked about these answers is in contrast to some of the other extreme universe questions where you might have noticed people tended to answer in their local environment. They're like thought about what is the brightest thing in our solar system or what is the biggest thing nearby. Here, people really went sort of universal. They really cast their minds into the entire universe to find something really, really dense.
Mm. You mean like the person who said it was the core of the Earth?
Exactly not that person. Everybody but that person, yeah.
All right. Well, there were other answers here. Some people said neutron stars. Other people said antimatter. Those are pretty spacey, physics-y answers.
Yeah. Yeah. I think antimatter is a bit of a stab there. You know, antimatter is not any more or less dense than normal matter, right? It's just another kind of matter. It's the opposite kind of matter. But a neutron star is a good answer. And I like the people who said, you know, I don't know, something strange out there in space. Like, that, you know, just conveys the whole idea we're trying to get across here, which is that space is filled with weird stuff, something crazy and strange that you probably can't even imagine.
Well, that seems to be the answer to every single one of these extreme universe episodes. It's like, what's the brightest thing in the universe? Some weird thing out there in space.
Something in space. I've noticed this trend that you seem to be trying to assemble a sort of universal list of answers to physics questions. Like, how many physics questions can you just answer with the phrase, the Big Bang, or space, or, you know, physics? It's like you're trying to find shortcuts or something.
Well, you know, I want to be ready when that physicist approaches me on the street wearing sandals and asking me strange questions about the universe. I want to be ready, you know?
You want to be ready? Yeah, I think we should do that someday. We should just slip your answers in and see if any listeners even notice.
Do I get to Google first?
Nobody gets to Google first. There's no Googling allowed in these questions. It's just, what do you know now? What's in your mind? What answer can you construct?
All right, well, let's launch into this discussion, Daniel. Let's figure out what is the densest thing in the universe. But first, let's maybe talk about what is density. I think we all have an intuitive sense of what density is, but, you know, maybe it's different from the physics definition.
Yeah, and we talk a lot in this podcast about sort of the difference between technical physical definitions and sort of cultural definitions. And in this one case, I think they're pretty well aligned. But let's just go through the basics, bring people up to speed in case they haven't thought about density since, you know, high school chemistry or something. And so density is not a fundamental unit. It's a derived unit, which means it's a ratio of two other things. It's mass over volume. So mass is just like how much stuff is there. It's different from weight, right? Weight is how much force is there on you from Earth's gravity. Mass is just like how much stuff is there in you, right? And remember, we talked about that another time. What is mass? And it comes from inertia, and it's the property of an object to resist changes in its motion, right? So that's what mass is. All the particles inside you and all their energy add up to give you a certain amount of mass. And then on the bottom of that is volume, right? So it's mass over volume. And volume is just how much space do you take up, right? How big are you? So something can be really dense if it has a lot of mass and not very much volume, or not very much mass, but even less volume, right? So it's not about being extremes in mass or extremes in volume. It's all about the ratio. It's having a lot of mass in a small space.
I see. It's not about being the biggest thing or about having the most mass. It's about having the most mass in the smallest amount of space.
Yeah, because you can think of things that are really, really big and really, really massive, but not very dense, like a blimp, right? You know, a blimp is not that dense because it can float in the air, right? It's filled with a gas that's less dense than air, even though it's really big and it has a huge amount of mass to it. A blimp is not actually that dense.
But if the blimp was made out of rocks, that would be really, really dense.
That's right. That would be a terrible design for a blimp. Exactly. I don't recommend you buy any stocks in your friend's rock blimp startup.
Well, it depends on what you're trying to float in, right? If you're trying to float in something that is denser than rock, then it would work.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not sure where that exists. Is lava denser than rock? Probably not, right? So I'm not sure where your rock blimp would even work, but sure. Yeah. Maybe, you know, on the surface, maybe in the liquid nitrogen oceans of Jupiter.
There you go.
There you go. There's a great reason to invest in that startup now. Yeah, but the point is things can be really big and really massive without being very dense, right? Dense requires a huge amount of mass compacted into a small space.
So the densest thing in the universe doesn't have to be something big. It can be something small.
That's right. And things can be very, very dense without being that big, right? You can have a really, really small amount of something that's very dense as long as there's a huge amount of stuff crammed into it.
But it could also be a really big thing. Like you could, you know, the densest thing in the universe could be like a star or a neutron star. It could be something that big.
Yeah, exactly. It could be big. It could be small. It could be massive. It could be not that massive. The key is the ratio, again, between the mass and the volume.
How much stuff is crammed into a certain amount of space.
Exactly. And, you know, that's physics density. And I think that matches pretty well with what people's intuition is for density. I don't think we have a big disconnect like we usually do. So congratulations, physics naming team. You picked a good one this time.
Well, I guess intuitively, you know, it's kind of like holding something in your hand. You know, like if you're holding a little rock, that's dense. And you know it's dense because it feels heavy, but it still fits in your hand. But if you have like a ball of cotton in your hand, that's not very dense.
That's right. And so one way to compare densities is to say, I'm going to compare different kinds of stuff and have the same volume. So the same amount of it, same like physical space full of it, and then just compare the mass because it's the ratio of mass to volume. And if you fix the volume, then you can just compare the mass. So you can compare like a handful of rock to a handful of cotton, to a handful of air, to a handful of, you know, hot lava or whatever. And don't actually try to get a handful of hot lava, but...
handful of lava sounds like a terrible
That sounds
idea.
Like a, you know, a high school band name or something. Up next on Extreme Universe, handful of lava. Anyway, if you fix the volume, then you can compare the mass.
Okay, so you have a couple of great, interesting numbers here for us, and they're all based on a fixed volume, which is a 1 teaspoon, right?
That's right. I thought a teaspoon is like a macroscopic quantity. You know, you can imagine it's just like a normal kitchen spoon full of stuff. And then we can think about how heavy, how much mass is there in a teaspoon of this versus a teaspoon of that versus a teaspoon of something else. And so if we fix the volume, then we can just think about how much mass there is.
How much a teaspoon of something would weigh.
That's right. Now, weight, of course, is slightly different from mass, but, you know, they're connected. And here on Earth, something that has more mass has more weight. You know, far away from Earth, then you can still have mass even if you don't have weight. But they're the same. If we're doing this experiment on the surface of the Earth, then it's equivalent.
So step us through here, Daniel.
All right. So I thought we'd start really, really light, all right, just sort of for scale. And imagine if you had, for example, a teaspoon of space, right? I mean, I don't know how you would get that, but say you like scooped up a teaspoon of space, or you had, you know, stuff that had the same density of space.
Like, what do you mean space? Like average space? Or like if you went out into space, grabbed a scoop of it and brought it back to Earth, is that what you mean?
Yeah, the average amount of stuff in space. And remember, we did a whole podcast episode about how spacey is space, and it turns out that the answer is pretty different depending on where you get your scoop of space. But in all cases, as long as you're, you know, far away from the Earth's atmosphere, the answer is pretty, pretty low. You know, you're going to get less than one proton in your teaspoon.
Okay, so this is like the average teaspoon of the universe.
Yeah, exactly. The average density of a teaspoon in the universe is 1 × 10⁻²⁷ kilograms. So that's 0.2701. That's how much a proton weighs. So you're going to have like a whole teaspoon with just a proton in it. That's about the average density of stuff out there.
And a proton is pretty small, right? I mean, it's
that's
one
right.
of the, it's pretty much... It's tiny. It's almost nothing, right? It's almost a fundamental unit of mass, right?
Yeah, it's amazing because it's almost nothing, but then it makes up everything, right? And it's incredible how you can get big macroscopic stuff made out of super tiny stuff, right? It boggles the mind how small a proton is and then how many protons you need to make, like, you know, a cookie or whatever. There's so many protons in your cookie and you don't even think about them as you eat it.
Wow, so that's the average density of the universe, really, right? It's about one proton per teaspoon.
Yeah, and the reason is, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there in the universe, a lot of stars, and they're big, and a lot of galaxies, but most of the universe is pretty empty. You know, the stuff between stars and between galaxies, there's not that much stuff there. And the biggest volume of the universe are these super voids, you know, between the sheets of superclusters, where there's really basically almost nothing. And so because density is mass over volume, and the volume of the universe is unbelievably gigantic, then that's why the density is so small. I mean, it's amazing that it's even anywhere close to a proton, frankly.
Wow. That's pretty incredible to think that if you sort of like, if you shrank the entire universe into a teaspoon, like everything, that stuff, stars, us, planets, would just be about the size of a proton.
Exactly. But next, I thought let's look at something sort of around here on the Earth. And a good sort of normalization for like a standard for what density is water. Because water is... 1 gram per cubic centimeter, right? And a teaspoon is 5 cubic centimeters. So water is 5 grams per cubic centimeter. So you have a teaspoon of water, it weighs 5 grams, which is a whole lot more than a proton.
What about a teaspoon of tea?
A teaspoon of tea. That's a good question. It must be a little bit more dense, right? Because you've put something into it, but it's about the same.
Okay, so that's, I think that's a pretty good anchor for people maybe, you know, because we're all sort of familiar with how water feels and how much it weighs.
That's right. And if you're holding a teaspoon, you can tell the difference between having a full teaspoon and an empty teaspoon, right? If somebody pours water into your teaspoon with your eyes closed, you can tell the difference. Whereas if I put a single proton in your teaspoon, you're not going to notice. So yeah, you can feel it, right? You can feel 5 grams. It's not a lot, but it's also not nothing.
That really kind of tells you how empty the universe is, right? Like if our average experience of matter is a teaspoon of water, compare that to a teaspoon with one proton in it, that's really kind of the difference between our everyday experience and the actual whole other rest of the universe.
Exactly. At the low extreme, most of the universe is really not very dense at all. So we live in a pretty dense place compared to most of the universe. But then again, as you'll hear, our surroundings are not very dense at all compared to the densest places in the universe. So the craziest thing about the universe is that it has this enormous range. Most of it's not very dense at all. And then there's these incredible pockets of total density.
Well, let's keep scooping up more and more denser things. But first, let's take a quick break. All right, we're scooping things up indiscriminately here and measuring their density to find out the densest thing in the universe. And we just scooped up some water. So some water is about 5 grams.
That's right, 5 grams per teaspoon. And then people, a lot of people said, ooh, maybe the sun or a star. That seems like a dense thing, right? Because it seems like it's trapped by gravity. And the reason it's burning is that it's all this gas been compressed. So people figure, well, it must be pretty dense, right? Well, it is dense, but it's surprisingly not that dense. I mean, the density of the sun is about 7 grams per teaspoon, so only a little bit denser than water.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
The sun is not that much denser than water.
Yeah, the sun is not that much denser than water. Now, the sun is really big, and the sun is really hot, but it's not actually that dense.
So this is the average density of the sun, because I imagine the sun is denser at the middle. And less dense at the edges, right?
The sun really doesn't like when you talk about its middle that way. It's been working on it for a few billion years. But yes, the density of the sun does vary. So this is the average density, exactly. And I think the reason that it's not more dense is that there's more than just gravity going on, right? Gravity is the thing that made the sun. It pulled all that stuff together. It starts that fire. But once you have that fire happening, it's like a constant explosion. And that explosion is making the sun less dense. So the sun is this constant balance, right? It's a trapped, ongoing nuclear explosion. The explosions are pushing things out and gravity is pulling things in. And so if it was just gravity, then you know the sun would collapse into a very, very dense state. But the reason it doesn't collapse is because it's exploding. So that keeps it, you know, a little fluffy.
So you're really only kind of measuring the density of the fuel of the sun. Like once it turns into fire and photons, once it turns into light, you don't really count that as part of the density.
That's right. We're measuring the matter density of the sun. But you know, a lot of the photons produced in the sun never leave it because they're reabsorbed. You make a photon somewhere in the middle of the sun, it's going to get reabsorbed before it leaves the sun.
But I think the idea is that if you scooped up a teaspoon of the sun, it would sort of feel the same as this teaspoon of water. It might be a lot brighter, right? And hotter. But
exactly.
But yeah, that's the idea, right?
Somebody out there is imagining being blindfolded and you're saying, I'm either going to pour a teaspoon of water into your teaspoon or a teaspoon of the sun and you won't be able to tell which. And you're thinking, yeah, I think I'll be able to tell. But you're right. You won't be able to tell from the heaviness of it because it's not that much heavier than water.
All right. And in fact, it seems like things are even denser here on Earth.
Yeah, exactly. And you might be thinking, well, water's not that dense. And you're right. And if you just like bent down and scooped up a teaspoon of rocks, you know, of like gravel or whatever, then you would have something denser. In fact, the density of the Earth, again, averaging over everything in the Earth, is 30 grams per teaspoon. So remember, water is 5 grams, the sun is 7 grams, the Earth is 30 grams per teaspoon. That's a lot denser than the sun.
So the sun is actually kind of fluffy, right?
Yeah, it's like a big cozy pillow.
On fire.
Yeah, and the reason is, right, the Earth is not on fire, right? If the Earth was more massive, so that there was more gravity, so we'd compress it more and fusion would get started, then it would actually get bigger, right? And then it would be more fluffy. So Earth is more dense because we only have gravity going on. We have no outward pressure from fusion to make us fluffy. We're not living in an explosion.
We are pretty compact. So, but that's kind of the average density of the Earth, but there must be things on Earth that are denser than the average density.
Big variation in density. You know, the core of the Earth is more dense than the rocks under your feet, for example. So there's a lot of variation. But if you look around on Earth for like, what is the densest thing that occurs on Earth? There's this one element, it's called osmium. And osmium weighs 110 grams per teaspoon.
110 grams. So like, that's a lot. That's like, how much is that? Like 15... scoops of the sun compressed down is how much osmium weighs.
That's right. If you had a teaspoon of osmium, it would feel like you had like a half a cup of water in your teaspoon. The stuff is pretty dense. I've never seen osmium. I don't even know what it looks like or if you can pour it, if it's liquid at room temperature or whatever. But it's the densest stuff on Earth.
But that's on the surface of the Earth. Like maybe down in the center of the Earth, things are more compact because there's more pressure.
Yeah, and you're right. The core of the Earth is more dense than the rest of the Earth or the Earth's crust, for example, or the average density of the Earth, which is what we mentioned earlier. But sort of surprisingly, it's not that much more dense. Like it's twice as dense at the core of the Earth than it is at the Earth's crust, which is most of the Earth. But so it's not crazy. It's not like a jillion times denser or anything. I mean, twice as dense is a lot, but it's not shocking.
Okay, so now take us out into space, Daniel. What are some of the densest things out there in space?
Well, so as we talked about, stars that are normally burning are not actually that dense, right? And so in our solar system, they're pretty fluffy. In our solar system, one of the densest things is just the Earth, right? It's a pretty concentrated blob of rock. So what you got to do if you want something really dense is something I think one of our listeners on the street or one of our interviewees on the street actually mentioned. What you need is a failed star or a star that has gone supernova and then collapsed, right? And sometimes when a star blows its load and it's finished burning all of its fuel and it's expended all of its energy and it no longer has that radiation pressure to keep it fluffy, it collapses into a neutron star. It's called a neutron star because the gravity is so intense that it forces all the protons to give off an electron and become neutrons. And it's just like a big ball of neutrons.
And they are really scrunched in together, right? Because there's so many of them that the gravity really compresses things and makes it really, really, really dense.
That's right. It's ridiculously dense because, again, there's no process going on to counteract it. So all you have is gravity. It's just like packing these little neutrons in. Imagine like a huge bag of ping pong balls, right? And you squeeze it so that they find like every little gap of space gets squeezed out and they all find exactly the tightest way they can all fit together. And the density of this thing is incredible. I mean, it's even hard to understand. You know, we're talking about a teaspoon. If you had a teaspoon of a neutron star, it would be 50 times 10 to the 11 kilograms.
Wow. That's a lot of 11s.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's 5,000 billion kilograms per teaspoon.
And you wrote here it's about 700,000 Eiffel Towers in a single teaspoon.
Yeah, I was trying to find an understandable unit of mass. Like, you know, what is comparable in mass to a teaspoon of a neutron star? And it turns out, you know, it's almost a million Eiffel Towers boiled down into a teaspoon. Like, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, you couldn't hold up a single Eiffel Tower. I mean, I know you're been working out and you're pretty strong and everything, but an Eiffel Tower weighs a lot. Now take a million Eiffel Towers and then condense them down into a tiny teaspoon. It's hard to even imagine what that kind of matter is like.
Well, you know, I am stronger in France.
Is that because the Earth is not round? There's a difference in like the difference from the distance from the center of the Earth?
It's probably just the French wines out there.
You feel stronger in France. Exactly.
But I think I see what you're saying is that a neutron star is really just a star that went out, right? Or that collapsed.
Yeah, exactly. It finished burning.
And so you're saying that our sun would be that dense, except that since it's exploding, it kind of keeps everything fluffy. But if you were to suddenly turn it off, all that stuff would scrunch down into something like a neutron star.
Right. Yeah. So to take the bomb analogy, you know, a nuclear bomb, when it's exploded, is not actually that dense. It's a huge fireball, right? But the fireball itself is not that dense. It's much more dense before it explodes, right? When it has all that fuel compacted into a small place. After it explodes, it's much less dense. So an exploding bomb is less dense than a non-exploding bomb.
Right. It's kind of like cotton candy. You know how cotton candy is big and fluffy, but if you like scrunch it down, then you just get one really dense piece of candy.
Yeah, you're making the sun sound really comfortable and cozy. It's like big and fluffy. Yeah. Like cotton candy, you know?
Sweet, pink.
Pink. What is in the air over your house that you think the sun is pink?
Well, you know, it depends on if you're wearing rose-colored glasses, you know?
That'll give it to you. That's your cartoonist license. You know, that's your art. Yeah, exactly. So a neutron star is actually one of the densest things in the universe. It's unbelievably dense. You know, I think isn't even denser than Thor's hammer. You're the Marvel Universe guy.
I think it is made from the heart of a dying neutron star. So I don't know if it's heavier, but it sounds like it's maybe in the same order of magnitude.
Well, so then do the calculation. You know, if a teaspoon of neutron star is 1,000,000 Eiffel Towers, then Thor's hammer is what? I don't know, 100 teaspoons, 1,000 teaspoons? You know, you're talking 1,000,000,000 Eiffel Towers. So every time Thor picks up that hammer, he's lifting 1,000,000,000 Eiffel Towers.
It's a comic book.
Wait, we're doing the physics of comic books here today, folks. But, you know, not only do you have to be strong, but you have to be worthy, right, to pick up Thor's hammer.
So that's pretty dense. If you scoop up some neutron star in a teaspoon, you would be picking up 1,000,000 Eiffel Towers.
Yeah, so make sure you do your stretches before you try that, or you're going to hurt yourself.
Make sure you use a strong spoon.
A spoon made out of osmium, or a spoon made out of 1,000,000,000 Eiffel Towers?
Adamantium.
That's right. Or vibranium.
You sort of gave it away. You said a neutron star is one of the densest things in the universe, but maybe, so you're saying it's not the densest thing.
Well, it's a little bit unclear. It depends a little bit whose camp you're in. Are you an Einstein kind of person, or are you a Schrodinger kind of person? Because depending on what you think is going on inside a black hole, black holes are either the densest thing in the universe or not very dense at all.
All right, it's time to pick sides. Einstein versus Schrodinger. But first, let's take a quick break. All right, we're talking about the densest thing in the universe, and we are now at black holes.
That's right, and we are right smack in the middle of the longest standing physics grudge match. It's general relativity versus quantum mechanics. Albert Einstein versus Schrodinger and Heisenberg and all those other smart folks. And so you might be thinking out there, all right, let's tell me, how dense is a black hole? Because a black hole is also something that happens after a star collapses, right? Sometimes a star forms a neutron star, sometimes it forms a black hole. And a black hole seems like it must be the densest thing in the universe because it has the strongest gravity, right? The problem with the black hole is that, how do you define the edge of the black hole? Remember that to talk about density, we have to talk about mass. Black holes have huge masses, but we also have to talk about volume. So what's the denominator? What's the edge of the black hole? And one very reasonable thing to say is that the edge of the black hole is the point of no return. You know, the point where if you're closer to the center of the black hole than that, then light can't escape and nothing can ever leave.
Right. So you were sort of saying, what do you count as the black hole is the question.
Exactly. Because if you're going to do density, you have to calculate mass over volume. So what volume are you including?
And so you're saying one option is to use what they call the event horizon, right? Right. The point where not even light can escape the vicinity of the black hole.
That's right. And I think that's a reasonable definition because we can't see inside the event horizon. So we have no idea what's going on inside the event horizon. So all we really can do is average over it, right? We can say, well, we know how much mass there is and we know how big it is. What's going on inside? You know, that's Einstein versus Schrodinger. So if you don't want to be dependent on which physics genius is right about the universe, then you just need to calculate the mass of the black hole divided by the volume enclosed by that event horizon.
So I think you're saying that a black hole should be measured by when it's black.
Yeah, exactly. Right. When the black starts.
Like the...
Yeah.
Where the black starts.
Exactly.
And the whole holiness starts.
That's right. And the issue with black holes then is that they are really, really massive, right? Which means there's a huge amount of gravity, which means the event horizon is really, really big. So say you don't know what's going on inside a black hole, but there's a huge amount of mass in there. The event horizon grows linearly with mass. So for example, you have twice as much mass, the event horizon is twice as big.
It's linear. It's like a 1-to-1 increase. Like if you double the mass,
yeah, exactly.
You double the radius of the black area.
Exactly. You double the radius of the event horizon. Now, for those of you who know something about geometry, think about that sphere, right? Now, if you double the radius of the sphere, how much does the volume go up? Well, it goes up like the radius cubed, right? So say you have some black hole and you double its mass somehow, then you've increased its mass by 2, but you've increased its volume by 8, right? 2 cubed. So the density actually goes down. So you double the mass of a black hole, its density goes down by a factor of 4, which means really, really massive.
According to your definition of the black
hole,
right?
Yes, exactly.
If you count the black part as the black hole.
Exactly, which seems like a reasonable definition, though, you know, we'll talk about another definition in a moment. And so what that means is that the more massive your black hole is, the less dense it actually is.
But, you know, I guess it's I see what you're saying, like you should count the black as the black hole. But that's, it's not like a physical boundary, you know, it's not like a surface. Do you know what I mean? It's just where the effect of the gravity starts to get crazy. But it's not really sort of like, you can't really touch the surface of the black part, right?
I wouldn't recommend it. But, you know, it is a real physical boundary. You know, if you're a photon and you are approaching that and you don't turn, you're going to fall in. You know, it's like saying, how big is the Grand Canyon? Well, you start the definition at the edge of the Grand Canyon, right? Not at the river at the bottom of it that made that Grand Canyon, right? You fall into the Grand Canyon, you still fell in the Grand Canyon. It doesn't matter if you fall into the edge or if you jump out of a helicopter in the middle. So I think it's a pretty reasonable definition.
That you're putting the emphasis on the hole part.
Well, that's what makes the black hole so cool, right? Is the hole part, not the black part.
So if you just think of the black hole as a hole, then you have to measure where the hole starts.
Yeah.
So you're saying the density of the black hole is not determined by how much mass is inside of the black hole. It's just kind of like how big the hole is, which when it grows, it doesn't help the density.
That's right, because there's a connection there, right? The more mass, the bigger the hole. And the bigger the hole, the less dense, right? So you sort of trap there. In fact, to get a really dense black hole, what you need to do is have a smaller black hole, right? If you take half of the mass away from the black hole, which of course you can't do, right? Then the mass goes down by 2, but the volume goes down by 8. And so now the density increases by a factor of 4.
Okay, so then the smaller the black hole, the denser it is.
Yes, exactly. So start with like a really big black hole, right? I did some calculations here. If you have a super massive black hole that has like the mass of 4 billion suns, right? 4 billion times the mass of our sun, that'd be a really, really big black hole. Its event horizon would be so big that the density of the black hole would be the same as water. It'd be 5 grams per teaspoon of black hole.
Oh, I see, because all the mass is just concentrated inside of this really, really big hole.
Exactly. And again, we're saying we don't know where stuff is inside the hole. You know, we'll talk about that in a moment. But if you have a really, really dense blob of matter that forms a black hole, then its event horizon is so big that it's really, on average, not denser than water. You seem unsatisfied by that.
Well, I'm just confused a little bit. So you're saying you need a billion suns for this, right?
4 billion suns.
4 billion suns. So if you stuck 4 billion suns inside of a sphere that big, it would be a black hole.
It would be a black hole.
So it doesn't matter how those suns are arranged inside. It could be in a little point in the middle, or it could be in a, you know, the form of unicorns spread all over the hole. It would still create the same black hole.
Or they could spell out your name.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you're saying we don't know how the mass is distributed inside of that black sphere. It could be anything.
That's right. And we don't, because we can't see inside black holes, so we don't know what the distribution of mass is. Is it all in one little point in the center? Is it a little fuzzier because of quantum mechanics? Is it some, you know, broader distribution? We don't know because we can't see. That's why it's a reasonable definition to say, you know, everything inside this sphere, because we can't see any deeper anyway. Anything beyond that requires speculation.
I always thought black holes had to be like a point. Everything had to be inside of a little point. But you were saying that they don't. They could really be like a fluffy cloud of 4 billion suns.
That's right. And another cool thing is that any amount of matter can become a black hole as long as you put it in the right density, right? You take your teaspoon of earth or a teaspoon of water. You can make that into a black hole if you condense it down to a small enough area, right? However small that event horizon has to be. But if you have enough mass, right, then it doesn't have to be that dense. That's the point. Right, so you take 4 billion suns, you can distribute them in a really big area and it'll still be a black hole. A really huge black hole. So I don't recommend that. If you are distributing suns around, please be careful not to make a black hole. It's easier than you think.
Be careful handling those suns.
Yeah, so the point is, for huge masses, it's easier to make a black hole because they don't have to be as dense. For small masses, like you want to turn your teaspoon of water or tea into a black hole, it has to be really dense to become a black hole. There is a number, right? You can calculate how small you'd have to compress that into, but it has to be really dense.
All right, so that a supermassive black hole that's 4 billion times the mass of our sun would actually not be that dense. It would be about as dense as a teaspoon of water.
That's right. But if you made a black hole out of just one sun, right, then it would be really pretty dense. It would be about as dense as a neutron star.
Oh, I see. Huh. About as dense, but it could be denser.
Well, smaller black holes than that could be denser than neutron stars, yes. But the smallest black hole we've ever seen is about 6 times the mass of the sun. So in terms of actual stuff we've observed in the universe, then the densest black hole we've observed is not as dense as neutron stars because we've never seen one smaller than 6 solar masses, and it'd have to be smaller than that to be denser.
But so why haven't we seen one? Could one exist?
They certainly could exist, yeah. There's no minimum size to a black hole. Remember, at the Large Hadron Collider, we think we might create black holes, and those black holes would be like particle-sized. So there's no minimum size to a black hole. So they certainly could exist. There could be black holes out there that are the mass of the sun or half the mass of the sun or the mass of one Jorge, for example. They could exist, but they're harder to see, right? Smaller black holes are harder to see.
So the densest thing in the universe is probably a black hole, but it would have to A, be a small black hole, less massive than our sun, and B, we haven't seen one. So technically, the densest thing we've seen is a neutron star, but the densest thing that could exist is a small black hole.
Unless you're willing to pierce the veil of the event horizon and talk about what's going on inside the black hole.
What's inside a hole, right?
Yeah. Well, then that's the thing. We don't know, right? Now, originally, Einstein and general relativity, they say in the center of a black hole is a singularity, is a point, and a singularity means a point of infinite density, right? A point where there is a huge amount of mass in zero volume, which is pretty hard to get your mind around. Like, how do you have stuff in no space? But black holes are hard to get your mind around anyway. So that's what Einstein would say. Einstein would say, oh, the answer to this question is obvious. It's the singularity inside a black hole. But quantum mechanics.
He's dead and he wouldn't say that. So
his spokesperson would say that, I guess.
The Einstein Foundation.
That's right, the estate of Albert Einstein. But the quantum mechanics folks would say, look, we know the universe is quantum mechanical, and quantum mechanics says you can't have that much stuff in a well-defined location, right? Quantum mechanics says we know there can't be a singularity at the center of black holes. We don't know what's there. We don't know how it works. We don't know what's going on. And at that point, gravity gets so strong that our theories of quantum mechanics don't work, and we don't have a theory of quantum mechanics that works when gravity is really, really powerful. So it's a big mess. We don't know what's going on inside a black hole. If general relativity is correct, which we're pretty sure it's not, then there's an infinite density singularity. If quantum mechanics is correct, which we think it is, but it doesn't work inside a black hole, then we don't know.
So what's the densest thing in the universe? Apparently it's the ignorance of physicists. We don't really know any of these things.
No, we have no idea. That's the answer. We have no idea what the densest thing in the universe is. It could be a neutron star. It could be a small black hole. It could be a singularity at the center of a black hole. It could be something else weird and quantum mechanical that's going on inside a black hole. We just don't know.
All right. So that's the answer to what is the densest thing in the universe is we don't know exactly. And it kind of depends on what we've observed and what the true theory of physics is at these extreme situations.
That's right. But the densest thing we've ever found is a neutron star, which is plenty dense to impress you about extreme densities in the universe, right? It goes from like a proton in a teaspoon up to a million Eiffel Towers in a teaspoon. So there's an enormous range of densities. You know, the universe is not just like uniform and spread out, right? It's like mostly empty with these incredibly tight packed pockets.
And that works even in France.
That works even in France, exactly.
All right, thanks for joining us in another one of our Extreme Universe series. We hope you enjoyed that.
Thanks for tuning in.
And hey, if you have a question about the universe or want us to talk about another extreme thing in the universe, let us know.
If you still have a question after listening to all these explanations, please drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Daniel and Jorge, that's one word, or email us at feedback@danielandjorge.com. Thanks for listening, and remember that Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.